My name is Randy Taylor from Oklahoma State University in the Ag Engineering Department, and I appreciate everybody coming back. I kind of sitting here after the having to talk after the break with the bar being open. It's a tough slot to fill, I guess. But at any rate, I'm going to talk a little bit about on-farm testing and probably going to talk a little bit about a lot that's already been mentioned as far as some of the equipment and things. And it's kind of more of a, I don't know, maybe a motivational presentation. So if I get a little evangelical about it, you can see where my passion is. So why on earth would you want to do any type of on-farm research? You know, you got to think about, you know, what's the point, and what are you trying to do? And usually you're trying to look at some kind of a fact-based solution or some type of answer to some question, maybe that you don't have an answer to. Maybe you're not getting from your local experiment station or university research, or for some of your companies that are doing research in your area. But if you get that, you also want to look at being able to try to predict some future performance. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, when you start thinking, hey, I want to compare two things because I'm trying to make a decision about what I want to do in the future. And so certainly some change in management practices is probably what you're looking at. Why do you want to do it? Maybe you just want to validate something that's done a little different. You know, I've been in extension a long time, and you know, when we talk at field day somewhere, whatever we may be talking about from equipment standpoint, you know, somebody asked Tom asked Brian how he put his fertilizer on his trials. Well, some of it was urea and some of it was UAN. It may have been strained, but you know, if we talk about, you know, using a culture to inject UAN, you know, in a fertilizer system, then you know, some farmer may say, well, I'm doing things a little different. You know, what if I did it this way? You know, so there's always some little twist about how they may be trying to use things, and we may not have that answer for them, and he may want to look at some things himself. You know, maybe you're looking at some site-specific things as well, and some of the stuff we've talked about. But really, it's looking at that alternative management practice in your own conditions and seeing if you think it's going to be more profitable for you. On-farm demonstrations, we certainly see these a lot. You know, they certainly are not synonymous with research. When we're putting stuff out on plots, the purpose really with an on-farm demonstration, at least, you know, from an extension standpoint or maybe from a company standpoint, is to show you a technology that's been proven through research. And so it's not to do the research itself. So it's not to answer the questions. It's just say, hey, we're going to put this out here so you can take a look at it, because we've got good evidence that says that it works. And so that's where we're going to go. And so consequently, you're typically looking at a yield response or a lot of measurements that go along with it. And so you may have, you know, the classic one I think that you see is as you drive around and certainly through the corn country, and maybe, you know, in cotton country as well, is you'll see those variety trials. They're unreplicated. You got all the signs out there. We have a little field day. Everybody gets to come out and see them. That's more of a demonstration and certainly not from a research standpoint. And, you know, one of the things we came up with several years ago, I've been in, you know, the time I spent at Kansas State University, we did a lot of work with producers trying to do on-farm research. You know, I look at this applied research model because we're seeing it, you know, at our public institutions. We can argue whether it's right or wrong or, you know, whatever, but we'll certainly see a decrease in funding available for agricultural research. And so I look at things where we try to have a cooperative relationship. You know, at the university, we have analytical and research skills. That's what we've been trained to do. Producers are trying to really boost efficiency and profitability, reducing production costs. Industry consultants, you know, they're you know, they've got a market. They're trying to work products into the environment or maybe a service. And so to me, we've got this cooperation where everybody's got something at stake if we all come together and work on things. So now, if me personally, I'm not sitting here going, hey, I've got to go plant my cotton, I've got to go put my fertilizer on, I've got to spray it. The producer has to have a stake in that. And I remember when I first got to Oklahoma about 6 years ago, we're having a meeting, and well-renowned scientist from Plant and Soil Scientist, you know, researcher, you know, we were talking about doing on-farm research. He goes, Taylor, That won't work. He goes, they'll cut your plots before you get there. And I said, then I've got the wrong person, you know. If he doesn't want to know bad enough that he's not going to wait on me, then I'm at the wrong place. And so consequently, we talk about having partners. You know, we've always said, hey, an extension, we've got a cooperator. And to me, a cooperator is somebody who will loosely tolerate your presence until you slow him down. And then he's going to cut your plots, you know. And so it's got to be somebody that wants to know the answer to the question as bad as I do. But the reality is, it shouldn't be my question. It should be his, and I should be helping him, not some ivory tower going, hey, this is what we need to work on. You know, it should be grassroots, and so that's the way I say it. And the industry people, and we've done this, and we did this with when I was in Kansas, we looked at different drills for no-till soybeans. And so we were working on producers' fields. They had to have a yield monitor to participate because we're doing field-scale stuff. And we're planting between terraces. Some of our plots are 5-10 acres, but they're all replicated and randomized across the field. So classical research design, the producer had to be willing to work on that. The industry people all brought their drills and operated them in the fields at 5 different locations across northeast Kansas. And so they had a significant commitment to it as well, because I didn't want to be the guy running some company's drill and all of a sudden it not look good. And they go, well, that egghead at the university screwed it up. I was going, no, I'm going to let the industry guy screw it up himself. And so we kind of, you know, worked that model where everybody had something at stake in it and everybody wanted to know the answer. And that's what I see with on-farm research. I mean, it's got the potential to really expand knowledge, because I think it's investing back in your business. You're running a business, and so you invest back in that business to try to make the business better. And I don't know. I make sure I keep a new audience, I guess. But I always say that one of my all-time favorite bumper stickers says, "If you think education is expensive, try ignorance for a while." And so that's why I kind of look at on-farm research as being, hey, let's learn a little bit in the environment that I work in. And so that's where I want to be. There's a lot of things you can compare. It may not be as easy as it seems, but then again, it's not as challenging as it seems either. If we look at a lot of the variable rate planting, variable rate seeding capabilities on planters, most of them were not bought to do variable rate seeding. Okay, they're not using them for that in a lot of cases. What a lot of guys use them for is it's easy to push the button and get the seeding rate right for the field that you want to be on. I'm planting an upland field or I'm planting a bottom field. It's irrigated, it's dry land. Hey, I'm not switching sprockets anymore. I'm pushing a button on a touch screen. And so that simplicity is what guys buy it for. But that same technology allows us now to push the button in the cab and do a seeding rate study across the field very easily. On-farm research is probably not best for unreplicated comparisons. That's what I say, but what is? You can use a way wagon, whatever you want, for unreplicated stuff, and you're still not going to get any information out of it, in my opinion. That's what I'm talking about, the current technology. We got, you know, if you've got variable rate seeding, variable rate fertilizer applicators, and yield monitors, we could turn your entire farm into a research farm with whatever kind of trials we wanted to do, and it would not reduce your capacity to accomplish field work. And that's the thing that we don't want to give up. We've bought bigger, bigger, bigger. We go faster, faster, faster because we have acres to cover. We want capacity, and we do not want to slow down. I mean, two times you do not want to slow down, and I understand this as well as anybody. Do not want to slow down when I'm planting. I do not want to slow down when I'm harvesting. And so that's the reason I'm saying with the technology we've got, we can do all of that and deal with the data later. And so all of that technology, I think, is available for us to really get into it. Now, we do have some limitations with some yield monitors, specifically with grain yield monitors. Yield maps approximate crop yield at a point. They don't measure it. We measure mass flow through the machine, and we're calculating yield. No different than if we're weighing truckloads or modules. We weigh a mass, we know what area it came from, we redistribute it back across it. And yield monitors are the same way. If we look at grain combines, yield does not or flow rate in that combine does not start and stop abruptly. It tapers in. Now, cotton pickers are a little bit different with that. So they're not certainly less pronounced than with grain combines as far as that lead lag time on the flow rate of material. So we can do a pretty good job of putting that stuff back. Like the yield maps that George showed earlier that had, you know, you see pivot tracks in them. You know, we see the same stuff with grain yield with grain yield monitors, but typically not as pronounced as you're probably going to see with cotton. So I think certainly there are limitations with them, but not excessive. I know Tom spent a lot of time talking about software, and so if you're doing yield, if you're going to do on-farm research, and this is basically a corn yield map from a field south of Topeka. The dashed lines are indicating two plots that are in the field, and it's seeding rate plots going left to right or east to west across it, where the red and the yellow are the highest yielding, and the green is the lowest. The kicker is like you're not going to look at the plot, look at a map, and detect what the differences are. And I don't even really think that you're going to go in with a software and select zones and do very good, very well with that. I think you need to be a little more analytical when you approach it. I can tell you that there's significant differences in yield between those seeding rates that are across the field. And if you look at the west edge of both of them in kind of some areas there, the highest population is on the west side and yielded better because we happen to get a year with really timely rains. And when you get really timely rains, the higher corn population is going to do better. Whereas the rest of the field is planted to the same one that's kind of on the east side of that field. So if we look at these side-by-side comparisons, we looked at 29 corn hybrid trials, some data from Alabama to Iowa, and some in Oklahoma and Kansas, and we assumed that if I make two passes in the field, regardless of whether it's hybrids or not, these two adjacent passes, we make the assumption that they are the same, that they came from the same population of numbers or whatever. And so we made that assumption, the null hypothesis, and we took a little statistical procedure to calculate how different do these two passes, two adjacent passes, how much different do they have to be before we have a lot of confidence, 68-90% confidence to be specific, that they are actually different. So how two side-by-side passes, how different do they have to be before I have faith that it's actually not just a random occurrence, that they're different? And basically looked at a couple different things, looked at the mean value for all 29 trials, and also looked, we kind of kicked some out and said, hey, these are really variable. We're going to eliminate these and look at the ones that are more consistent. And that's what I call the low standard deviation ones. But basically, if we looked at this, and that's yield on the x-axis, and on the vertical axis is a distinguishable difference. And so if you look at that purple line is probably the one that's on top, is probably reality. Now, we can assume that, now saying that I've got 90% confidence that two things are different, and if you look at that 100 bushel per acre, it's in there in that probably, 7.5, 8 bushel range. So I'm saying, at 100 bushel, so I got to be 8% different, two side-by-side passes, before I'm confident that it's actually not a random occurrence. And so we can't distinguish, you know, we can't distinguish big differences in unreplicated trials. So in other words, they've got to be really different. Now, somebody might say, well, you know what? I would make a management decision for a lot less than 8 bushels an acre. And I'm saying, well, it's going to be a random decision if it's based on non-replicated data. And so I'm just really pushing the fact that if you're going to do on-farm research, go to the effort to replicate it, or else you're not going to be able to make very good decisions from it. Now, I would say this. So some of the trials that we did look at in this study, they had replicated trials. So it wasn't just a hybrid A through E in a trial. They actually had some replications in it. And so we looked at those, and basically that last bullet says, of those trials where we had replications, if I took the data from the way wagon and analyzed the trial, and I took the data from the yield monitor and analyzed the trial, they both lead me to the same conclusion. Okay, there's error between them, but the yield monitor is taking me to the same end result that the weigh wagon is, and so consequently, the error doesn't bother me as much. Because now, if the yield monitor took me to a different conclusion than what the weigh wagon was taking me to, then I would be concerned. And I would say, I have never seen a trial dealing with grain where the yield monitor led me to a different conclusion than the weigh wagon did, if it's replicated, an experiment. So a well-designed experiment is key. Now, some cotton. I was involved in this experiment this year where we were looking at yield monitors on cotton varieties. What you see on the left, now this is some data from Georgia that George provided us. It's Ag Leader Yield Monitor. The mean error was 5.5% between Bow Buggy and the yield monitor. Ranged from -6.5% to 15% on this. There's some stuff in the plots. I will tell you this, that if I looked at the errors were significantly different by varieties. In other words, so this is replicated three times, the varieties are, that if one variety has an error, that error is consistent, and it might be different than another variety. We might be dead on one variety and always 10% low on another. So there's differences. But if you look at there, that's analyzed with the reference scale on the left and the yield monitor on the right. The reference scale probably has a little more sensitivity, I would say. It's picking out differences in varieties that we're not able to get with the yield monitor. But my big key is I look at this. I'm trying to find some hope in it somewhere. But my top group and my bottom group are about the same with either one. To me, the big thing is what happens in the middle here. Can I separate these? And we're just now starting to get into this. And we've got data from five different states. I don't know how many trials with this. So we've got a lot of data, and I'm trying to make sense of it. That was the role that I took on, and I don't know who held me down to make me do that, but there's not much sense in it. I'll show you some of Tennessee data that Mike and his crew there in Tennessee shared with us, and now we're looking at it. It's almost the opposite. It looks like the yield monitor is more picking out differences that the reference scale is not. And so why, I don't know, his error is 26%, range -11 to -51. Plots were still about the same size. Error, again, is significant. But even as scattered as all this is, I got my bottom and I got my top. It's kind of the middle where we're having a hard time. So I can say what's the best and what's the worst. Is separating them in the middle is where we tend to have problems. And again, there are some differences due to varieties. And I'm going to talk a lot more about that tomorrow afternoon in the engineering session. We're actually doing a report on more of this data. But I want to share that I think from a cotton standpoint, if I want to do on-farm research and I want to look at varieties, I'm not giving up yet, but I've sure been beat down. And so I don't know where we sit on that, but I think there's probably still some hope. I think we look at it. We are seeing errors that are consistently significant by variety. We're tending to group them about the same, whether it's a yield monitor or the Bow Buggy. I think there's probably some other errors associated with some of the data as well, specifically with calculating area with yield monitors. So there's that I haven't delved into as much. And right now, we were hoping that we would find some nice, easy method that we could just correct for variety. Maybe it's turnout, or maybe it's boll weight or something. But we've not found, we being me at this stage, looking at the data that we've got, no clear method to adjust for the errors that we have by varieties. But hope is not lost, because I don't give up. But anyways, plan the research project. So we talked a little bit about the mechanics. Let's talk about what we can do. Request help, replicate, randomize. Those are the three R's that Dr. Chad Godsey put forward. One-on-one. We're just going to do simple side-by-side comparison. Strip plots. What do we get out of it? We got the potential to make whole field decisions. OK, Okay, I'm just going to run strips to a field. Here's an example. Maybe it could be strip-till corn or cotton. We want to say, is grain yield increased with strip-till compared to conventional till? There's some noise in there. Other things to consider, we got to make sure nitrogen management's the same across plots, planting time, growing conditions, weed, insect management. In this particular study, there's four reps randomly placed through the field at least. This is the strip-till. Basically, what it's looking at is a paired comparison. So that's the other thing. You know, somebody mentioned making sure the economist, I think it was George, the economist is involved at the beginning or else they get mad. Oh, you go take your stuff to a statistician after you've got done with your experiment. And they're like, oh, you can't analyze this data. You've left all this out. And I'm like, well, you know, I've got field work to do. And so thinking about how you're going to analyze it ahead of time is key. And this is going to be just with a paired comparison. I've got strips through my field. It's an A and a B. And I've got five observations of A that are paired with each one. They're paired together. So I'm basically going to compare these two to each other. And so it's a really simple analysis. And I'm like, hey, is A better than B? And so that's one thing. We go another one. We can go randomized side-by-side strip plots. We may have multiple things that we're looking at. Now we're going to make, with the randomization and the side-by-side plots, I think we make whole field decisions with more confidence than we do with just paired t-tests and the other side-by-side comparisons. You know, we had some stuff, other things to consider, I think, with noise. We did some seeding rate stuff in irrigated corn in northeast Oklahoma, and Tom showed some seeding rate data earlier. The big thing, I think, to consider is some of the same things that could cause problems with us. But here's population. I got two seeding rates. I got a perfect fit between them. The big thing is if you're going to do inputs like that, you need to be able to say, what's the optimum? And you can't determine the optimum from two. If I'm going to do anything that's got a rate involved in it, I think it's 4 to 5 is what you need to have. And ideally, you got to get out of your comfort zone on the high end and the low end. And I know Brian does a lot of on-farm trials with nitrogen and would probably like to have a zero everywhere he goes. But you know what? A 90-foot wide strip of zero all the way through the field is not real palatable to a lot of folks, and so and justifiably so. But you've got to have something on that low end; otherwise, you don't know where the response is, and now it's really hard to make a decision. You can get a little bit more advanced, I think, and now you got randomized plots, and you're starting to look for spatial interaction. Now, I got some of my colleagues will argue with me about how you can analyze the data and what we can do. I personally do not believe that you have to do spatial statistics to analyze on-farm research. I think that you can look at it and try to decide what's the decision that you want to make. You know, if I'm trying to decide between A and B, and even if it's a rate, I think I can decide on a rate without doing spatial statistics. But if I want to start looking at developing that variable rate prescription or site-specific data, then you're going to have to start breaking stuff apart by zones or some other smaller management areas where you're going to be able to come in and try to discern that. So interpreting results, interpreting data can be really challenging, especially if the research was not well designed to start with. I've got a friend that I work with and that Brian works with as well, and he is adamant. It's 13 treatments. I have no idea where he came up with 13, but you cannot have more than 13. Oh, Steve's laughing too. You cannot have more than 13 treatments, okay? Because what happens is when you start getting too many, you can't make sense of any of it. And so, again, coming back to keeping it simple and how well you implement it, taking care of the noise. One of the hardest things to do, and probably one of the things of most interest to producers, is cropping systems type research. Conventional till versus no-till or strip till. But the hardest thing is with that research is the conventional till is not ready to plant when the no-till is. And so there's always trade-offs. Systems research is the hardest agronomic research to do, in my opinion. And so there's always going to be trade-offs. And so how well you can implement that and make it work is going to be really important. So well-designed trials, well-thought-out trials are important. A systematic approach, develop a question, hypothesis, those are the important things. Make sure it's planned without bias. You know, you can't, I'm going to do half the field to this, half the field to this. Well, one half might be better of the field, and so you can't just do it that way. And then data's got to be carefully measured, recorded, and you have to be able to analyze it and to interpret it to get back to answering the question that you asked initially. Keep it simple. These trials require time, energy, and money, and the last thing you want to do is waste it all because you implemented it poorly or you made it too complex that you can't analyze the data. Got a question, are you a researcher or you work for a living? You know, that's the thing. So you gotta think about those things. Where are you going to put your emphasis? My deal is, okay, you don't have to be a researcher, you know, to do the deal. Find someone to partner with. And I got, again, going back to some on-farm stuff where we did at K-State, they're doing some soybean seeding, seeding rate trials across the state. And the grad student was complaining that he had to go out and do stand counts at all these fields because these are huge plots. And so he's doing stand counts in multiple locations of his plots. And his advisor said, "You got to be kidding me. This is all you have to do. They planted it for you. You know, they're going to harvest it for you. They're going to send you the data. All you've got to go out there and throw a hula hoop down and count some plants. So get your butt in the truck and go, you know. It's pretty dang easy work. But good work, though, you know. So partner with somebody and you develop the thing. When you look at treatments, you need a logical check. You got to be able to compare back to what you're doing. Because generally, we're talking about farming, we're doing on-farm research. I'm picking between A and B. I've got to do one of these things, okay? I just got to have confidence that one is better than the other. And so make sure that what you're comparing it to is maybe something that you're doing now. Include that range of treatments. If you're doing anything with the rate, fertilizer, herbicide rates, seed, whatever, you need multiple rates, 4 to 5 when you're looking at that. I think the bottom line, on-farm research helps us answer questions that are important to growers, the people that are actually, in the field. But it requires a little bit of time, making attention to detail. I think the partnering with other folks that are interested is key. Spread the workload a little bit and let the people that are good at what they do what they're good at and then get from there. And I've been an OSU football fan for a long time, and this is what we do every year. We approach the season with cautious optimism, and I would do the same thing with your on-farm research. The big thing, and a guy I worked with for a long time, he said the big thing when doing research is not enough to know that your data is crap. Sometimes you have to be willing to say that it's crap and then walk away from it, you know? And so that's important. And the same thing when you're doing on-farm research, you have to know when that data is going to be good enough to help you go forward and make a decision. Because it goes back to one of the early slides, you want to be able to predict what's going to happen in the future and how you're going to make these management decisions and go. And so, again, one of the things that we've done in Oklahoma is we've kind of called it partners in research. Well, we're working with producers because, again, we're looking for partners, not cooperators. And I have 58 seconds left. I'll turn it back over to you. Maybe this will work.